Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com, the independent voice of UNC Sports, brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com, the go-to provider for all your Tar Heel gear.
I'm your host, Tommy Ashley. Listen to the Inside Carolina podcast, sponsored by Johnny T-Shirt, JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Rate us, review us, like us, review us on both Spotify, iTunes, all that stuff, Apple Music, anywhere you get your podcasts, and also on YouTube, like us, subscribe, do all that. It's on the beat. It's Tuesday when you hear this. I got Ross Martin giggling at me already. Ross, I told you my mind is gone today, but I want to start with you. 20 days, I believe, by the time the Tar Heels tee it up against Boston College up in Chestnut Hill this weekend. There are some benefits to the layoff, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, the talking points last week and this week from Mack Brown has been kind of starting over. He said the Syracuse game seems like so long ago, and I think that's something we all agree on. 20 days between games, 9 weeks of practices between from the start of preseason training camp to this week. So they've had 9 weeks before their second game, which is very unusual. So yeah, I think there's pluses and minuses to the time off. I think they're fully healthy. If there were any lingering issues with Joshua Zudu and Desmond Evans, I think they're going to be good to go from what we heard today from Mack Brown and SID Jeremy Sharp. I think a negative would be that's the lack of real game experience. It's obvious. Lack of tackling, lack of physicality, lack of bringing players down in practice. You saw what happened with teams in week one and two with the lack of that physicality. So UNC may have a little trouble with that. Boston College has played two games already and back-to-back weeks, and UNC's had 2 weeks off. So also the coordinators mentioned, you know, they have more tape on Boston College now. They have two full games, a better idea of what they can do on defense and offense. I think that plays into their hands a little bit, whereas UNC likely did not show everything they showed, can show against Syracuse. And you'd expect UNC to be healthy and rested, but would have to definitely knock off some rust. And so I think it's just an interesting scenario. I think Greg brought us up last week in our podcast. It was another type of medical issue was the last time UNC football had this much time off between games. But if everything goes as planned, UNC would play in Boston College in a couple days.
Yeah, you got that right. If everything goes as planned. Greg, one thing that I took from last week's press conference with Sam Howe is a lot of people, fans particularly, have fretted over the gap between games. Ross talked about the benefits, the health issues, and to get everybody ready to go. Sam mentioned building chemistry with his receivers. It's easier to do, or you do that in practice. Well, like Ross said, they've had 9 weeks of practice before playing game number two on October 3rd in Chestnut Hill. You know, that. How right is Sam to talk about that? Because I agree with it, but then I say, well, live game reps matter more. But he makes a valid point that you build chemistry on that practice field.
Yeah, and I think if it was any other year than 2020, we would kind of dismiss that comment, right? But the fact that North Carolina did not have spring ball, and they not even spring ball, they weren't even around campus to go out and say, hey, you know what, we had Chipotle for lunch, let's go throw balls at 3 o'clock, which maybe you could typically do if you're around. That didn't occur. And it was not until the end of June that everybody on the roster got back to Chapel Hill. And then you immediately have the COVID testing issue where they went like a week or so without practice. So they really were limited in what they could do in terms of getting reps outside of the structure of a practice or a workout. And so that is a benefit. The more you can get together and do those kind of things, the better. Sam's point was, you know, when you play a game, 3.5 hours, you may only throw it to Daz Newsome, you know, 5 or 6 times. and you're not going to be throwing it to any of the guys on the third team because they're not playing. And so the more practice time that you get, it is going to benefit you in that regard. You are going to clean up some of those errors that you probably would have already cleaned up had you had spring ball. The interesting thing to me, and I hate it for the guys, but it seems like every year in training camp, rewrite that story, right? Like 3 weeks in, 20 practices in, and they're like, dude, I just want to hit somebody else other than my teammate. And it's the grind of training camp. That's what we talk about. They're at 9 weeks, and they played one opponent. And that's one of the reasons that the MAC is set for 2 weeks now, and the coordinators have said the same thing. They really are starting over. Syracuse counted for sure, but it really was kind of a scrimmage just in terms of, you know, it was a new situation with all the COVID protocols. You didn't know what Syracuse was going to do, so you're really learning on the fly how to adjust to that defense and some of the offense partly. And that really was a learning opportunity. But now because you've got like a three-week period in between games, you're back to the drawing board and you're kind of having to relearn things. And that's kind of been a big talking point. But end of the day, the guys want to play. And I think your point, Tommy, that you got to get those live game reps. UNC had it set up perfectly when the ACC revamped the schedule. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Syracuse, who was picked 14th in the league, season opener. Everybody thought they would win that one handily. It was a little closer than we thought it would be. Then you got UNC Charlotte. Charlotte, I guess, is what they call the sports teams now.
Get it both right. Of those, I got Twitter blasted for saying it wrong.
Both of those are, you know, 20-plus point spreads. Then you get a bye week to prepare for this tough stretch. That kind of got blown up. You only had Syracuse. And so now they're going into a difficult stretch. First road game, but they're back to playing. Provided the game takes place as we're anticipating, they're ready to get back at it.
Yeah, I think UNC's done a good job, by all accounts, and talking to Mac Brown and to some of the players of keeping spirits high and keeping it loose and working in a lot of young players. And I think it kind of goes to show the leadership. I think Sam Howell's a huge leader for the Tar Heels and what he said last week to us. So from what we've heard, you know, the practices have been kind of fun, maybe a little bit different to keep them engaged, working in a lot of younger players, which I think the starters always like to see the freshmen and walk-ons get more action. That kind of keeps everyone engaged. And they've been doing, working in strength and conditioning at different times. And kind of restarting, you know, last week to kind of get into another game week this week, because they weren't preparing for anything last week. You know, they prepared for Charlotte, and they had kind of a weird off week, and now they're preparing for Boston College. That's kind of how it laid out.
You mentioned defense, and the biggest thing with defense is tackling, and we'll see how that shakes out for North Carolina. You know, the Big Ten is going to get in on the party late. The SEC guys look pretty good for the most part. But, Ross, one guy that's got to be excited to get out there is Curious Connolly. And I believe he said, if I'm correct, that he cried when he found out he's going to be the starting nickel. Big deal for a freshman.
Yeah, I mean, Bateman talked about him a lot today. He got asked a couple questions about Connolly, obviously a current topic of interest, kind of that young freshman that everyone's really pumped about, that Don Callahan's been hyping up, and he'll get his first start on Saturday. I mean, Bateman's super high on him in terms of his athleticism, his physicality. He said he was up to 220. He's kind of down probably more to 215 now, and it was going to be hard for them to keep him off the field. So they were going to try somehow to get him to play. He played some nickelback against Syracuse. They were preparing to play Morrison a lot more at safety against Syracuse. That's what Bateman told us today. But when things got a little closer than expected, they went all veterans across the board. So kept Morrison at nickelback, and Connolly didn't play as much. But now Morrison's at safety. Connolly is your starting nickelback, and you're going to see how he handles it. And Bateman's thing was just keeping it simple. You know, he may not know all the different schemes and all different plays, but it's not a super, super hard sport, and we'll see what he can bring. I'm excited to see how he's used on blitzes and how he's used in different packages, because he's a different type player, as we've talked about. I mean, he's a 6'1", 220-pound, you know, hybrid type linebacker, defensive back who's playing nickelback right there in the box.
Greg, going up against a Boston College team that likes to run it traditionally, but they have a little bit better quarterback maybe than they've had. But then you see what they did against, was it Texas State? Is who they played this past weekend and needed probably some questionable pass or personal foul penalties on Texas State to squeeze that one out. How does Conley fit in when you're defending what Boston College is trying to do? I would think that his ability to come down into the box is going to be big on Saturday.
Yeah, that's always been the question with Morrison, was his durability in terms of, you know, he's only 5'11". I'm not sure exactly what he's listed.
Morrison's 5'9".
Is he 5'9"? So he's even shorter than I was giving credit for. Yeah. He's kind of a light guy. So they like his instincts, and they've always thought that's kind of what he could bring, and his versatility. But size was not it. And as we saw in the South Carolina game last year, you know, he lowered his head one time and was concussed, I guess, on the first drive of the game. Conley is a guy who will eventually probably move to safety, but he is a bigger body. And so the question is, you know, with him being such a young guy, is he going to be taking the right angles? There's no question that if he gets there, he's going to lay a hit, and he's going to be beneficial in that regard. But, you know, when you're having to count on a true freshman and a kid, again, going back to the lack of spring practice and kind of the abbreviated summer workouts, he hasn't had as many snaps as maybe you would like, but it's kind of a trial by fire deal, and we'll get to see what kind of playmaker he is.
Yeah, Ross, Jeremiah Gimmel's a guy that's getting more and more comfortable in the role of a leader for this North Carolina defense. Speak to that. I mean, Chasseret gets all the ink at linebacker, but Gimmel, I think we said it in the preseason, if my memory serves, that Gimmel might be the best linebacker on the team.
Yeah, I have a feeling Greg has an article coming on Gimmel this week. But is that right, Greg?
Yes.
I think what was interesting is that when Bateman talks to the opponent's offensive staff, after they played them and kind of after, if they're not going to play him again, they say that Gimmel's the guy that they really look to. He's super fast. He's super smart. And that, he stands out to, I mean, outside of Chasseret, he's one of the major defenders that stands out to teams. Heard the same thing about Ray Vuhasic. But if you talk to Gimmel, and I'm sure if you're a hardcore football fan, you've heard some interviews with him on YouTube from Inside Carolina. He's a sharp guy, and he is now the leader of this defense, I think, once kind of Woolfolk's out. And Bateman says that he does not have to motivate or call out players because Gimmel is calling out players. And he is the guy who's getting on his teammates and holding them accountable. And that's huge. I mean, when you have your leaders holding your teammates accountable and making sure everybody's in the right spot and getting on them if they're not working hard enough or putting enough time on film. And that's the teams that are led by the players are usually your better team. So he's huge. And alongside a playmaker like Chaz, who's a little bit more reserved, it's a good 1-2 combo.
Greg, Ross kind of went where I was going with you, the leadership led by the players. I'll never forget talking to some players, like when Marvin Austin and all those guys came in, that they didn't have anybody really to check them, or they didn't allow themselves to be checked by upperclassmen at the time. Carolina's had a little bit of that. Mac Brown's building that, but now Gimmel's stepping in, not even as an upperclassman really, to be that guy for this team. How important is that with Wolfrook's absence?
Oh, it's critical because Miles was really kind of the heart and soul of the defense in terms of leadership skill sets. That's very important. And so now you got even more pressure going to Gimmel and Surratt there in the middle. And we'll have to see, you know, this has been such a unique year. You had a 4-day break in training camp because of, you know, COVID outbreak on campus. So you had that kind of halt. You go through game prep for Charlotte, and then you learn after your polish day on Thursday that the game's not going to happen. That's an emotional letdown. They thought, I mean, Bubba was even talking about, they're likely going to get a game scheduled for September 26th. Everybody's expecting that to happen. They had kind of scheduled their weekend plans around the idea that there would be a game. That didn't happen. So we're really talking about ups and downs, and that's really where the players have to kind of keep things in check. And one of the things that Mac Brown talked about today that I found interesting as he said, he kind of had an idea when he was at Texas. I mean, of course, he wins the national championship there. And if Colt McCoy, doesn't get injured, maybe they win too. But he thought he kind of had an idea of what was happening when teams would come out flat, maybe make some mistakes, didn't look so good. But he said by being able to kind of watch from afar, you really got an idea that, if a team comes out flat, guess what? That means they weren't prepared. They weren't ready to play. If they make a bunch of mistakes, it's not because mistakes happen. It's because they weren't prepared. They weren't ready to play. And because of that, they've really kind of focused on, look, each and every day that you come out, you have to take it as, this is my one day to get better. This is my one day to play at the highest level that I can. Regardless of what happens tomorrow, regardless of how uncertain some of these games are. And so far, they've been pleased with what the players have done in that regard. Will that continue? We'll have to wait and see. But I think the team has done everything they can to this point. I still don't know exactly what to think about this North Carolina team. I still don't know what to think about Miami. We've seen them play three games. So it's a little too early to kind of anoint North Carolina as this legitimate top 10 team. But they did what they needed to do against Syracuse. They came out with a victory, and now we'll have to see what they can do against Boston College.
Greg set up a great segue. We're going to do a quick ad read before that. After that, we're going to get into some ACC power rankings, adding Western Carolina to UNC's schedule, and ask Greg about Boston College's QB, Phil Jurkovic.
Jurkovic.
But first, Tommy, when it gets a little cold over there in Johnson County, what do you like to slip on? What kind of things do you like to wear?
Hoodies, long sleeve t-shirts, all that stuff.
Beanie, oh yeah,
my head, toboggan for my head.
Yeah, keep your bald head warm. I love sweatshirts. I broke out the gray sweatshirt. I broke out the navy sweatshirt. They're both from Johnny T-shirt, GiantT-shirt.com, the Inside Carolina sponsorship of our podcast here. You can get 10% off all your sweatshirts, all your hoodies, long sleeve t-shirts, toboggans. Go to Giant T-shirt and GiantT-shirt.com. Use Inside Carolina's 10% off discount code for Inside Carolina subscribers and get all the stuff you need. It's great gifts. I mean, get your Christmas shopping out of the way. Make a big purchase and get 10% off. It's a great way to knock out gifts for nieces, nephews, cousins, brothers, sisters, parents, sons and daughters, get everything you need. Tailgating, cups, mugs, stickers, t-shirts, sweatshirts, hats, everything you need. Johnny T-shirt and GiantT-shirt.com, local, right on Franklin Street. Their headquarters, I think, are down the road in Hillsborough, where their big outlet is, and you can get everything online as well. It's a great website. Pick out what you need and use that 10% off Inside Carolina promo code only for subscribers. All right, we're going to pay some bills with the national reads. We'll be right back to talk about Greg Barnes' ACC power rankings, a little bit about what UNC's added to the schedule, and a little bit about Boston College's QB, which I think is kind of one of the major storylines heading into UNC's matchup with the Eagles.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top five leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.
And we're back. Tommy?
Yep. Great segue. You mentioned it earlier about Greg Barnes talking about Miami and Carolina's how they look, at least in the early season. Greg, I agree with you when you're talking about Carolina 100%. I don't necessarily agree with Miami the Miami take simply because they look really good. Of course, Florida State is awful, but
yes, they are.
You know, I guess that you got to go Clemson way up. And then from what I saw from Miami and Notre Dame, I'd put them second, tied for second maybe, and Carolina third just because Carolina hadn't played. Is that fair?
Yeah, and I think Virginia Tech's in that mix as well. I think those are probably your top five. I do think Clemson's a step above the rest. I think everybody kind of realizes that. And to be honest, I think I'd put Pittsburgh in there as well. So maybe yeah. there's a top six there that are like legitimate contenders at this point in time. Louisville, I think that's a pretty good team. I know they've lost a couple games already, and I don't know how severe Cunningham's injury was. I haven't followed up on that at the end of that game. But hopefully that young man's not out for an extended period of time. I know I'm probably a day or two late on that news item. But really, when you start looking at the other teams, I mean, State defense is a dumpster fire. Georgia Tech, still another year or so away. I think they're going to be good under Jeff Collins. Syracuse, not any good. Duke, defensively, Duke's good. The turnovers are kind of a joke. Wake's kind of a mess. So, yeah, I mean, you got your top six there. I think we can rearrange them, however. But I think, you know, Carolina, they benefit not having to play Clemson. They benefit not having to play Pittsburgh. But we'll get to see how they do against Virginia Tech coming up very soon. And then, of course, the big games they're laying against Notre Dame and Miami.
So, yeah, so Clemson, we got Clemson, Miami, Pittsburgh, Virginia Tech, UNC.
I think that's Boston, fair.
The Notre Dame, Boston College also up there. Those are the six you mentioned, Greg.
Not Boston College, but Miami, Pittsburgh, Clemson, Notre Dame, North Carolina, and Virginia Tech.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did y'all watch the State game?
I did.
Yeah. What do y'all think about Virginia Tech? You think they're – it's hard to kind of judge, but I was talking to Norm Wood, who's a beat writer over there. He said, like, they had 23 players out or whatever, but it was only a couple starters. Like, it wasn't that big of a deal, I think, as the media made it out to be. So I don't really know how to interpret that. I mean, they killed State. State couldn't do anything.
Yeah. Well, the quarterback was out. Starting quarterback was one of those 23, and they still rolled State. I just think State's bad, and Florida State's bad, and I don't see how you can judge how good Virginia Tech is based on whipping State. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know if that's fair. And I've got red on, so before Baden comments on my shirt, Baden, I'll tell you what it's about on the side. But, yeah, I mean, Virginia Tech's good. I do like the quarterbacks there. I like the transfer from Oregon. I like the – what's his name, Quincy Patterson?
I think Quincy Patterson's good. He's a guy who came in against Carolina last year. It was very impressive, and he did it again against State this year.
And the kid that started, Burmeister, I believe is how you pronounce his name, it was an Oregon transfer. Mm-hmm. And Hooker actually beat him out this offseason. So they do have really a trio of quarterbacks there that have played and look pretty good.
And their recruiting's been awful for the last 2 or 3 years, but they're still living off, I guess, earlier stuff. What do you think about Notre Dame, Greg?
I think Notre Dame is a tough team to contend with, just because they've got some legitimate guys along the offensive line, probably two high draft picks. Ian Book is a really good quarterback. Is he Trevor Lawrence? No. Is he in the running for maybe second best in the league with Howell? Possibly. And then I think defensively they're good enough. So that's going to be a challenge. You know, I think that's one of the good things for North Carolina playing Boston College is Boston College has a lot of issues, but they do have a big offensive line. That's one thing Steve Adazio always did when he was there. And so I think that'll kind of give us a good taste of how good North Carolina's defensive line is. And because there's going to be some other big offensive lines they're going to have to play. And Notre Dame is one that will be problematic as we get into November.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned a little bit about Pittsburgh, but I think Pittsburgh, a team that everyone's been kind of high on, it's kind of a dark horse. I guess being high on and being a dark horse are kind of oxymorons, but, you know, they put 55 points on Austin Peay. They beat Syracuse handily, 21-10, and they beat Louisville, and everybody was really high on what Louisville could do. They beat Louisville 23-20, so I think Pittsburgh's a team that's going to be there with already two ACC wins on their schedule.
Yep, it's going – you know, it's funny, everybody said Carolina's lucky they missed Clemson and Louisville, but I think Clemson and Pittsburgh are going to be the ones that Carolina chose appropriately, or whoever chose that schedule. Let's talk about another schedule matter before we get out of here. On the Beat podcast, Ross Martin, Greg Barnes, Tommy Ashley. Matt Brown announced adding a game, Ross, a late season game. Tell us about what's that all about.
Yeah, I mean, Greg wrote the article, or finished writing the article. It happened during the press conference. You're listening to Mac talk, and then he breaks the news they added a game. So you're scrambling to put the article together during the press conference. But December 11th, Friday, which is would be 6 days after the Miami game. Or wait, is that right? 6 days after the Miami game, or a whole week after the Miami game?
Six days after the Miami game.
Because Notre Dame's on the Friday, Miami's on a Saturday, and the next game will be Western Carolina at home. I don't think Western Carolina has played any games and won't for a while. And so that is between the last game of the season, which originally was the last game of the season, and the ACC championship game, which is December 19th. And the one caveat is that if they have to reschedule an ACC game, that would take priority over the Western Carolina game. So if some game gets canceled, which very likely, I think there's a chance it's more likely the game will get rescheduled than not at this point, it would push Western Carolina out of the picture and they would play that Friday or Saturday. Greg?
Tommy, I'm gonna quiz you real quick and I'll give you $10
if never goes well.
$10 right. If you get these three. Western Carolina, because of how their schedule is shaped up, they only have three games on their football schedule. The first game, as Ross alluded to, is not until November 14th. Yeah, a bunch of our buddies get together and say we're going to play college football for a couple weeks, and this is kind of what we get. Who are the three opponents? You know one of them.
I know Carolina.
Okay.
Is it ACC schools?
No.
They have three games total now?
Three games total.
It's not Campbell, because Campbell's already played. Well, Campbell will play their fourth one. I have no idea. Let's cut the chase.
Liberty and Eastern Kentucky.
So they are playing a season to get those three games in late November.
Yes, they're doing two sets of training camps. So they started the first one last week. So it'll be 4 weeks. Then they're taking like a 2 week break, and then they're coming back for another 4 week training camp before their opener against Liberty on November 14th.
Meanwhile, you're in Cullowhee, North Carolina, you know, trying to be a student and a football player. Like, what a life. That's a crazy school to go to.
That's an interesting schedule. But it was I right when I said didn't Campbell only play four games or only had four games? I mean, just bizarre.
But this is the disaster of 2020, right? Because the game is not going to matter if North Carolina somehow gets into the ACC championship game, which we don't even know. It's not even confirmed yet. It's going to be December 19th. That's what all of us are thinking. But now you've gone from Notre Dame to Miami to this game. You're probably going to want to be prepping for that ACC tournament or championship game if you get there, trying to rest some guys. I mean, it is a glorified scrimmage. That's all that will be.
Talking to Sean Drone and Mike Ingersoll on one of the podcasts back in several months ago, they talked about Friday Night Lights, where they'd let all the guys that never got to play against each other. It's going to be that. If you have a uniform, you're playing against Western Carolina.
It could be third string and walk-ons. Why would you play Sam Howell? Why would you even put him out there against Western Carolina when that game doesn't matter if you are going to play in the ACC championship game? I mean, there's no reason to play any sort of starters.
Bizarre world.
I wanted to ask Greg about Phil Jurkovic. He said he DM'd us to say he didn't know too much about him, but rather Bateman said he is a big, big quarterback, 6'5", 220, 225. I mean, how do you think that really challenges UNC? Like, defensively, are they going to have to bring in bigger bodies on the defensive line as opposed to kind of more of their pass rush sets? I mean, what changes when you go against a quarterback of that size who's having a lot of success as a passer, who's been one of the more prolific quarterbacks in the last couple of weeks?
Well, I think the fact that he was a big-name recruit coming out of he's somewhere in Pennsylvania.
He's a Notre Dame transfer, correct?
Correct. And he was the guy that was Ian Book's backup. And so we're talking about a kid that he realized he wasn't going to beat out Book, and Brian Kelly has really praised him for the level of talent that he was. So this is a big pickup because Boston College was not sure that he was going to be cleared in time to be able to play this year. Mm-hmm. So he's a young guy in terms of experience. And I know people want to make a big deal about Texas State. I mean, they won the game. They came back from a 14-point hole, did what they needed to do to get the victory. And so each week he's going to get better. But he is a big guy. He's got a big arm. He's mobile. I mean, he's not Marquise Williams by any stretch, but he can move around a little bit. And that's going to pose problems. I think it's really good for North Carolina. Of course, UNC is favored by, 13 points? So mm-hmm, I think everybody's 13. Expecting them to win. But this is a good opportunity to go against a pretty legit quarterback, even though he's kind of a young guy. He'll be better as the season goes along. But that's a good challenge. And so with Boston College's big offensive line, how well, kind of going back to what we said about Notre Dame, how well can UNC get pressure? And can they get pressure with just four guys? If they can, that really kind of sets the tone moving forward. If Boston College is able to give Jerkovic some time where he has opportunities to make throws down the field, then maybe it's not a blowout. Maybe it's a competitive game until late, and it's going to take North Carolina's offense scoring points to kind of pull away like they did against Syracuse. So a lot of opportunity there for North Carolina to find out about how good that defense actually is.
Yeah, looking at his stats, 70% or 71% on the year, 150 rating. I mean, 3 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Been sacked 8 times. I guess the big deal for North Carolina in this game is get him on the ground when you get your hands on him. And we'll have to see Chas Rat, Jeremiah Gimmel, and those defensive linemen trying to tackle the big fella. I'm going to break it off right here. On the Beat podcast, Ross Martin, Greg Barnes, sponsored by Johnny T-Shirt, johnnytshirt.com. Again, rate us, review us, subscribe, do all that stuff so you can get your Inside Carolina podcast in whatever medium you choose. Ross and Greg, I appreciate it.
Thanks, Tommy.
Thanks, Tommy.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com. Brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Where to go for your next Tar Heel gear purchase.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.